Chapter 14 of the Autobiography of Lord Alfred Douglas. This Legimus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Chapter 14. During the 3 years which elapsed between my first meeting with Oscar and his conviction in 1895, I stayed with him as his guest in Lady Mount Temple's house in Babbacombe. The house was lent to him and Mrs. Wilde, where he wrote A Woman of No Importance. At a farmhouse which he took near Cromer, at a house in Goring, where he wrote An Ideal Husband, and at Worthing, where he wrote The Importance of Being Earnest. In every single case Mrs. Wilde was with him, though at Goring she was absent for some weeks. He stayed with me as my guest on two occasions at Oxford, in the rooms, 34 High Street, over the Loaders Club, which I shared with my great friend, Lord Encombe. He also stayed at my mother's house near Bracknell. On several occasions we went abroad together. We went to Paris, to Algiers, and to Florence. At the last-named place I was by myself for some time, my mother having sent me there chiefly with the idea of getting me away from Oscar. But after I had been there about a month, he followed me. While at Florence he began A Florentine Tragedy, but whether he finished it there or not, I cannot now remember. During the time I was with him, I wrote some of my own best poetry. I was away from him altogether for quite 3 months when I went to stay at Cairo as the guest of Lord and Lady Cromer at the British Agency. Lady Cromer, Lord Cromer's first wife, and the mother of the present Lord Cromer, was one of my mother's greatest friends. I have already referred to the wildly untrue statements Oscar makes in the unpublished part of De Profundis, referring to this time, during which there was a slight coolness between us. My devotion to Oscar was at this time, again, a serious handicap to my material and social interest. In this way, after I had been with the Cromers for 3 months, I was, partly through the influence of my grandfather, Alfred Montgomery, and partly through the good offices of Lord Cromer himself, appointed honorary attaché to the ambassador at Constantinople, Lord Curry. The news of the appointment was given to me by Lord Cromer, and I must say, in explanation of subsequent events, that I did not get the impression that I was bound to take it up immediately. I told Lord Cromer that before going to Constantinople I wanted to go back to London, or at any rate as far as Paris. He did not raise the slightest objection, nor did he give me any hint whatever that such a proceeding on my part would be construed, as it actually was, into a piece of rudeness or impertinence to Lord Curry. My longing to see Oscar Wilde again was what made me go back to Paris. I wrote and told him I was coming, and asked him to meet me there. In the unpublished De Profundis, he represents that he, at that time, had determined to break away from me, and that he came to meet me again with reluctance. This is deliberately untrue. As soon as I suggested meeting him in Paris, he telegraphed his delight at the prospect. I left Cairo and went with Dodo Benson, the novelist, with whom I was at that time on terms of great friendship, to Athens, where I stayed as his guest at some rooms he had there. I spent about a week there in perfect weather, and passed most of my time sitting in the Acropolis, and delighting in the Greek sculpture, and its contrast to what I have always regarded as the ugly and unattractive Egyptian monuments. I greatly enjoyed my visit, and Reggie Lister, who was there at the legation as second secretary, made himself very agreeable, as he always did. I then went on to Paris, where I spent a week with Oscar, and so back to London to my mother's house. I fully intended to go on to Constantinople after spending a few days with my mother, but directly I got back I was told that Lord Curry was in a frightful rage because I had not come straight on to Constantinople, that he regarded my conduct as a piece of insolence, and that he now declined to have me as honorary attaché. I was amazed to hear all this, but not particularly perturbed. The disapproval of Lord Curry left me quite unaffected. I had never had the honour of meeting him, though I knew his brother, Bertram Curry, the head of the family, very well, and he, Bertram Curry, was a friend of my mother's, and had always been charming to me. I am afraid that I simply regarded and stigmatized Lord Curry's indignation as an unreasonable display of middle-class fussiness. I failed to understand what it was all about, and secretly I was delighted to escape from the necessity of going to Constantinople, and to be able to get back to London. Looking back at the whole thing now, I still do not understand why Lord Curry should have been angry. The only possible explanation of his attitude, which has since occurred to me, is that someone may have made mischief by deliberately misrepresenting the facts, and by representing my attitude towards my appointment as one of what Frank Harris is fond of describing as aristocratic insolence. All I can say is that I had not the slightest intention of being rude to Lord Curry, that I was gratified at getting the appointment, that I liked what I had seen of diplomatic life. I spent most of my time in the Chancery at Cairo, and was good friends with all the secretaries and attachés, particularly with Mitchell Innes, and that if I had known that it was expected of me, I would have gone straight off to Constantinople without a murmur. As it was, and considering that I went back to Paris and London with the knowledge and approval of Lord Cromer, and after consulting him, I cannot say that I was in the least to blame. I regard the whole incident as one of those numerous cases in which my most simple and harmless acts have been misconstrued and misrepresented, and when I have been blamed and abused without the slightest regard to kindness or charity or good feeling. If Lord Curry, who, to quote Wilde, did not rise from the ranks of the aristocracy, but was born in the purple of commerce, had been a little more grand seigneur than he was, he would not have made such a ridiculous fuss, and it would not have occurred to him, he was a newly created peer, that any assault on his dignity had been so much as dreamed of. However, there was the end of my diplomatic career, and I was in disgrace with my grandfather, Alfred Montgomery, and once more exposed to the risks of the mad dog threats of my father, who had then already for some time past been threatening Oscar Wilde and me because of our association and our being constantly in each other's company in public places. The miserable story of how my father deliberately set about ruining his son under the hypocritical pretense of saving him has been told often enough, with more or less accuracy. In the letter I wrote to Frank Harris at Nice in 1925, which is incorporated in the new preface to the Life and Confessions of Oscar Wilde, which Harris undertook to print as a preface to all future editions of his book, while at the same time deleting or annotating and stigmatizing as deliberately false practically everything he says about me in that book, I have given my final and official account of the matter. I am very reluctant to rewrite the story once more. The simplest thing is to reproduce that portion of my letter to Harris which relates to the action of my father, and my own action in advising Oscar Wilde to fight him, and supporting him, as I did, with money, and with my offer to go into the witness box for him. This I do in the next chapter. End of chapter 14.